Hey there. I am so glad that you're here. I'm Priscilla. Welcome to the chat. This is the place where we just kind of, you know, chat about things in our lives, things that matter. Today is an important conversation because we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people just kind of hold inside, hold in their hearts and in their own minds, and they don't really talk about it. They're not really open and honest about the way they're feeling. We're going to talk about grief. What do you do when you really have experienced a traumatic loss, one that has left a hole in your heart, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to recover from that and move forward in health and wholeness? We're going to talk to a couple of people today whose stories really will touch your heart. And I have a feeling there are going to be so many of you that are able to relate specifically to what they say. So you're going to want to stay tuned, grab a fresh cup of coffee or whatever your favorite drink is, pull up a chair, and let's chat. Glad that you're here. This is really going to be a great conversation. I want you to know that I'm just sort of tinkering around on Facebook right now. I want you to see this incredible image of a young lady named Denise and her husband on their wedding day. A gorgeous picture, and they are in love, they are happy, and looking forward to a lifetime together. And I'm reading a little bit of a post that she put up January of this year. She said that we all have those moments when we lose hope, the moment when it feels as though surely there could be no God, or at least none that we would call good. Whether that moment is captured within minutes or a lifetime, the despair flows from deep within our hearts, leaving us hollow. Where is God? The Bible says the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. What nearness will tend to this wound? What could possibly cover this kind of agony? Denise has a story to tell, one that I think is going to touch your heart, one that I think is maybe going to stir up something in so many of you and me that we just kind of have to deal with. She's got a story of hope and healing that is going to encourage us all. Would you guys please help me to welcome Denise Madison to our program today? Hi, Denise. I am so glad that you're here. So glad that you're joining us. You got a little baby bump there, Denise.
That's true. I do. Yeah, it's kind of hard to hide now.
Yes, I know. And you look lovely. You look lovely.
Thank you.
As I'm looking at, you know, this on Facebook, there's such a disparity between the picture we just showed. You look happy, content, peace filled. And then to read the text that you posted along with it. There's obviously a story behind that picture and behind those words. And so I know that you married this guy. His name is Corey. You were married for about 6 months.
That's correct.
Right? Tell us how you met.
We both think it's quite funny because we met online.
Yeah.
And
so it works.
You know what it does, as a matter of fact. It was the last place either one of us expected to be, but both of us had family members that kind of encouraged that. Very, very early on, we began writing love letters to one another, essentially. And he would tell me that he fell in love with me before we ever even met face-to-face. Mm. So it was absolutely, you know, it was kind of courting. He won me over with the way that he would just kind of write, and he convinced me somehow to meet up with him, and then from there, yeah, it was not very long at all before we both were madly in love with one another and kind of weren't really sure what anyone else would think, but we were ready to get married.
Yeah. How long was this from the time you met or started courting and dating to when you got married?
So from the time that we met until we actually got married, gosh, I've not actually done the months, but about 8 months.
Okay, eight months. All right. Mm-hmm. And so then you walked down the aisle, you said I do to Corey, and you were married for 6 months, but things didn't quite end up how I'm sure you envisioned it when you said I do that day.
No.
Could you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Absolutely. On the night that Corey died, I was coming home from taking my daughter to basketball practice, and my ex-husband had come to the door, and as I walked in, there had already been a lot of shooting that had taken place. And so my husband and lured him out of the house away from us, away all the danger, away from the kids and I. He lost his life that night, saving mine.
And so he was shot?
He was.
He was shot. And he was literally trying to protect you and the kids.
He was literally trying to protect us, yes, without question.
How long ago was this?
This happened on January 15th.
So we're talking 5 months, 4 months?
It's not quite 4 months.
Not
yet.
Quite 4 months.
Yeah.
So this is a real fresh, fresh wound in your life and in your heart. And yet, for some reason, you're choosing to talk about it today.
Yes.
Why?
Oh, gosh, that's actually pretty easy. So, you know, there's so much suffering in this world. You know, the Madison family, I'd say that one of the things that this has helped us to see is that 90% of the world, 90% of the population, they understand difficult, they understand hard. And we're sheltered a bit in Western culture. And, you know, we don't really, when something hard happens, we kind of want to say, God, why did you let this happen? The rest of the world, hard happens all the time.
Yeah.
But what I will tell you is that we have found the hope, and we know that, you know, when the Bible says these all died not having received the promise, but having seen it afar off, we know that the hope is what is to come. The hope is only found in Jesus Christ. We're going to suffer either with him or without him. And if there's one thing that I can share with people is I want them to know they don't have to suffer without him.
That's awesome. That's so great. I want to know what it feels like to lose someone like that so suddenly. If you can somehow describe what that feels like and put that into words, how would you describe it?
Well, I'll tell you that it feels differently on different days. I would say that initially, it's just, it's this giant void, and it's something that you know will never be filled. It is devastating. It's like your heart has been ripped out. And it's the kind of thing that could completely, if anything could kind of take you out, so to speak,
yeah,
it's that.
Sort of cripple you for
absolutely.
The rest of your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you feel any fault in it, in the sense that this guy was trying to protect you and lost his life doing it? Did you struggle at all, even though it would have been really irrational to struggle in that way? Sometimes situations like this cause us to go into irrational places. And I'm wondering if you thought, if he wouldn't have been working so hard to be my savior, he might still be alive. Did you blame yourself at all for any of this?
Oh, absolutely. I did.
What was your rationale? Like, what would have been the blame you would have placed on yourself for what?
If he hadn't loved me, if he hadn't met me, if he hadn't wanted to be what he was to our children, if he hadn't wanted to be my hero, if he hadn't wanted to protect me, there was no question in his mind. There was no question that God brought him to be our protector. You can read his journal entries. You can read what he wrote in his Bible. It is so clear that he knew it.
Yeah.
I read
on Facebook, you took a picture of just a quote that he wrote in his Bible, and he was saying, Lord, make me courageous. Make me a courageous protector for my wife and for my kiddos. And in the most visible, obvious way, he demonstrated the love that he had for you. And it cost him his life, but what a beautiful demonstration, really, and picture of Christ's love for us, that really the Lord put himself in harm's way for
Absolutely.
Us. Is that, did you in any way feel the Lord speaking to you about that sort of a correlation between what Corey was willing to do?
Sure. So it's so interesting because I would have told you that Corey is my hero way before that night. As a matter of fact, I've gone back and looked at cards that I wrote to him, and I called him my hero in every one of them. And he laid his life down for me every day of our marriage. He truly loved me the way that a husband is to love his wife. If I can, I'll just share something, and it correlates. And he would always tell me, my sweet D, I love you for everything that you are, and I don't spend a second thinking about anything that you're not. And that's how he loved me every single day. And so, absolutely, he already laid his life down for me. And then for there to be the ultimate laying of his life down that night, I've thought a lot about it. And honestly, it's given a deeper meaning to what Christ was willing to do on my behalf. I mean, there's not a lot of people in the world who can say, not only did Jesus die for me, but I had a person who willingly laid their life down so that I could live.
Mm. How are your kids doing? And tell us, your children, you have three children that you had from your previous relationship, is that right?
That's correct.
And then two children that were his children.
Yes.
But now you've got sort of this brood of five.
We do. Absolutely. It's glorious chaos.
How are your kids handling all of this? Because it's still so fresh for them, too.
It is. So it's different, obviously, because of the ages. We've got 14 to 4. So it's varies from child to child. I would say that they are struggling, and we rarely go through a week when they all make it to school for, you know, for a full week without having to come home for something. And as much as, you know, the nightmares are terrible,
did they see him actually
They didn't witness that,
okay.
But all of the after effects, and unfortunately, they had to hear me give the account of what happened to the 911 operator. Mm-hmm. So they know enough, and the older children are old enough, they heard mm-hmm. everything that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their own guilt. They have their own, all the things that you are explaining, those are things that they've had to go through as well. But I can tell you that one of the things that our family loves to do is we talk about the hope. We talk about that every day we get to get up and we either choose to allow this to render us useless for the kingdom, or we choose to shine the light of Jesus Christ. And I can tell you that there are days when the kids will just say, Mom, I just need to stay home, and that's okay. And there are days that they'll say, I am sad, but I'm going to go to school and I'm going to shine the light of Jesus Christ. Our 11-year-old witnesses to his Muslim friends on a regular basis, and he doesn't care what it is that they say back to him, because he says, Mom, they need Jesus too.
I have a feeling I know where they get that from. And then 2 weeks after Corey's funeral.
Yes.
What did you find out?
So 2 weeks after the funeral, I found out that I was pregnant, and we were not trying to have a baby. So, I mean, five is one thing. And we talked about it from time to time, and it would always go something like, really, 13-year-old and a newborn, you know, because she had just turned 14. So we always convinced ourselves that it was not wise, but God had other plans, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and I know that children are a gift. They are a gift. But in this situation, was it hard for you to come to grips with the fact that you were going to be introducing a child into this scenario and learning that so quickly and freshly after burying your husband? Was it good news?
You know, that's a really great question, because the day that I took the test, it kind of went something like this. No matter which outcome, the sadness was going to be there one way or the other. Mm. However, if I was pregnant, there would also be some joy. They don't cover one another,
Got
you
it.
Know? So the
yeah.
baby doesn't make any of the sadness go away, but it's yeah. brought us some joy. And it's done something, especially for the kids. There is a delight. And the five of them together, I really wish that you could see. It is just the sweetest thing. And it kind of helps me to understand how it is that God brings our families together, yeah. and he grafts us in that way. But this has done something just incredible for them, and they have such joy, and they crowd around my belly, and they talk to the baby, and they all want to sleep with me.
Yeah.
Not really me, it's the baby they want to sleep with.
And it's a bit of Corey there. It's a bit of Corey.
It is.
That is, you know, kind of still in your lives, you know,
sure.
and that probably brings them and you a lot sure. of solace as well. We're going to talk to you more. I want to talk to you about this hero of yours and okay. what made him such a hero to you. Okay. And we just want to hear more about this woman and how she's found such stability. I mean, the fact that you can sit on this sofa and talk to us so articulately about what happened and also the transformation and change in your life, that right there to me is a testament of how the grace and the goodness of God has already been demonstrated in your circumstances. So we're going to talk to you more. You guys stay tuned and we'll be right back. Hi, I'm Priscilla, and I wanted to take an opportunity to invite you personally to join me for a 7-session Bible study on the armor of God. We'll dive deeply into what it means to be equipped to stand firm against the schemes of the enemy. He is very real, and he has been so strategic and targeted in his attacks against us. Why shouldn't we be equally strategic and targeted in standing firm against him? And you and I have an opportunity to suit up, to put on some armor that works, and to go to battle and to see victory declared in our lives and in the lives of those people that we love. This Bible study will be one that will change our lives forever and will help us to walk in victory. So plan to join me, won't you? The armor of God. Well, there's just a lot, you know, a lot of your life that you have decided to share with people, you know, on your Facebook page and otherwise. And, you know, it really is a testament to really just how you have seen the grace of God through all of this and in spite of all of this. And even not only with you, we were talking about your kids before the break and her 11-year-old. Tell me his name again.
Marshall.
Marshall. So her 11-year-old wrote this. He said, when Pastor Mike said the words, "I pronounce you husband and wife," to Corey and to his mom, he says, "I was the happiest man," or 11-year-old. Let's just go with person. That's what he said. "I was the happiest person on earth that day. Things couldn't get any better, but I did lose my iPod. But anyway, I'm getting off topic." He said, "You know what? Today's been another day full of emotion. I'm so thankful to everybody for their outpouring of love, because today we're celebrating the life of my hero, Corey Madison. He sacrificed himself to save me. Well, not just me, obviously. He also saved my amazing sisters and Madison and my beautiful," which he spelled B-U-T-I-F-U-L, "my beautiful mom." I've heard that word hero a lot, not only from your 11-year-old son, but I've heard it so much from you. Why was Corey your hero? What was happening in your life up until the time you met him? Whatever you can share. There's so much that Denise is not able to share just because of the logistics legally with everything that is going on. But of what you can share,
sure.
What made Corey such a hero in your life and to your kids?
Well, for one, I would say that not a lot of men would walk into a situation and just openly accept and love a woman and her children. And what he was willing to do, what he was willing to kind of step into, and there were very, you know, difficult circumstances. There was an entire other side that he had to deal with that was not easy.
Well, I would assume that ultimately what happened didn't just come out of nowhere. I would assume there would have been a progression of things that would have sort of led up to that moment, that
Absolutely.
Night when it happened.
Absolutely. Okay. And I can tell you that, you know, for Marshall, one of the things that was so amazing is that Corey continually demonstrated self-control and patience in the midst of, you know, circumstances where he very likely should have just kind of lost his temper or said something or fought back. He refused to defend himself. He would always say, "These children need to see someone who's willing to exercise self-control on their behalf, because mm-hmm. unfortunately they haven't had that experience,
that.
And they need someone who's willing to stand up and do that for them."
Yeah.
And that's exactly why, I mean, he was their hero for that reason. He was their hero for, you know, I can't tell you how many things they will now say, well, you know, it's pizza and wing Thursday because that was Corey's tradition. It's, you know, there are just so many
who
things.
Who doesn't love
that,
pizza and wing
well,
Thursday?
Well, I know. It's supposed to be every fourth Thursday, but Marshall would never know that. So. but, you know, honestly, he, from the moment that he was committed to me, he wasn't just committed to me, he was committed to those children. And mm. and the same was true for me with Tenley and Asher.
His children. Yeah.
Yes.
We just
yeah.
were a family.
We really, I mean, we both felt like those were the five that God gave us.
Yeah.
And we both prayed prior to getting married that God would do something in our hearts, that he would allow us to have the same love for all of the children. And it was, you know, I'll never forget the time that he said, it was like God gave me these three children. And when they were born, they just happened to be, you know, at the time they were 12 and 10 and 5. Just happened to be those ages, but it couldn't have been any different. They just were born to me at those ages.
Yeah.
And same for me. Yeah. And he loved them. He poured into them and did all of the things that a father was supposed to do. And those kids, they needed it desperately. And he was daddy to all five of them.
So here's what I want to know. I want to know how you go from the kind of post that I read at the top of this show,
sure,
where you are in the depths of despair, you have questions, you're trying to figure out what kind of God can be good,
right,
to allow this to happen to me. How do you get from there to sitting on this sofa, willing to share hope with people, with others? How do you get out of bed the next day and the day after that? How do you continue to serve your family? And, you know, it's hard to figure out a new way to cook chicken for dinner on a good day. So I'm trying to figure out, how do you go from, man, I don't even want to get out of bed, to being able to pull yourself together and move forward? What does that process look like for you?
Right. So I will say that there were plenty of times that I didn't want to get out of bed, and plenty of times that, yeah, I just wanted to lay and cry.
Mm-hmm.
It is when your faith is challenged, when you're kind of brought to the place where you have to say, what do I really believe? That's kind of when you decide. You know, I feel like we all have these, I call them are you in moments, where the Lord is saying, okay, now here's your circumstance, are you in? Here's the circumstance, are you in? You know, and honestly, I think it was when God helped me to see how inverted we've kind of caused the relationship to be. And we look and say, God, how could you allow this to happen to me? How could you do this to me? When we've kind of gotten it the wrong way. The truth is that it is us who owe God everything. He doesn't owe us anything, you know? And when you truly come to the understanding of what he has done for you, it is nothing more than an outpouring of your love and desire for him. Now, I'll say that's part one. Part two is truly believing what Jesus said, what Paul told us about, that the hope is to come.
Yeah.
Right? You know, yep. This morning, one of the verses that I read is 2 Corinthians 4:17, and it's for the light and momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond comparison.
Yeah.
Right? So if we believe that, and we believe that what is to come is going to far exceed any light and momentary affliction, no matter what it is, then can't we kind of endure anything?
What about the person that feels like they can't, though? I mean, in a real, now, and not to minimize anything you've just said, because I believe all that.
Right.
But in a real practical, how do I get out of bed? Someone is in bed right now. They're trying to figure out how to move on with their life in a very practical sense, whether it is counseling or accountability or, you know, proactively writing verses on a 3x5 card so that you can see them all the time. What did you literally practically have to do to walk in the direction of healing? And I know you're still walking that course. Goodness gracious, it's only been a few months.
Right.
So, and you still have a journey ahead of you.
Right.
But what have you had to practically do as a woman who wants to be whole and,
right,
healthy? What has that journey looked like?
So, I mean, I'll just say, and it's different for everyone. I would never want to say that there's a formula.
Right.
Because there just isn't,
What has worked for
you thus far? So I'll tell you what's worked for me. Number one is you have to have your eyes on Jesus. And for me personally, eyes on Jesus looks like playing worship music at all times. I do believe in all things we can always, praise his name. There are moments when I can do nothing more than just lay prostrate on the floor and just cry. But as I cry, I'll say, nevertheless, you are my God. Nevertheless, you are my God. And I think we have to remind ourselves of that.
Yeah.
You know, we have to remind ourselves of who he is. And I believe strongly in kind of taking and meditating on his word and allowing it to minister to you. And even the moments when somebody gives you a verse and it means absolutely nothing to you in the moment because you're thinking you don't get it. Mm-hmm. You don't get it. Mm-hmm. It's saying, nevertheless, I'm not going to base things off of how I feel or my emotions. I'm going to base things off of what I know to be true, which is God's character. Mm-hmm. And so that has been what has gotten me through. Does that mean that I don't have days where I'm done and I just have to say to my boss, I'm sorry, I'm not coming in today, and I have to kind of like check out? That happens. But that's okay too, because
yep.
God's working in those moments as well. God's working a lot in those moments, to be honest with you.
You know, really what I'm hearing you say that I think a lot of us sort of miss the power of and the importance of is I'm hearing you say that basically gratitude matters. That saying, okay, here are the tears. I have a lot of why questions. This is a bad day, but I'm still going to say, thank you, Lord, for and list what it is of who he is and what he is still accomplishing in our life on a regular basis. And would you say that praising him, recognizing who he is and what he has done, that has been sort of part of the healing process is just making yourself remember all of the benefits of your God despite what has happened?
Absolutely. I think for sure it's reminding myself who he is. And yes, it is. It's having a grateful heart. In addition to having a grateful heart, I really do think that it's also believing that what is to come is mm-hmm. going to exceed any yeah. amount of pain that we have yeah. here.
Did you have to have any people in your life to sort of shake you and say, come on, we're getting out of the dumps. We're going to move forward. Let me help you. Have you had any friends sort of do any sort of tough love? We got to come on. We got kids to feed. We got a life to live. I'm not going to let you kind of get lost in this moment in your life.
I've had a lot of friends around and I've had a lot of people that have been there. Perhaps if you ask them the question, they might answer it a little bit differently. I would say that in the dumps really hasn't been me
That is amazing that you can say that you have not been in a kind of a pit. You haven't found yourself in this pit you can't get out of after this sort of a traumatic event.
There would be, there might be a few hours in a day, but we're talking in the very, very beginning when there were, 20 people in the house at any given time and they truly were allowing me to kind of have my moments, and there were plenty of people I knew tending to the children, making sure that everyone was fed and everyone was happy. And so I don't really think that there have necessarily been anyone that's had to say, come on, get with it. You need to be strong. But do I have people that are saying that to me every single day saying, you can do this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is still hard for you? Okay. Because the reality is, and I mean on a daily practical
yep.
sense, in other words, the reality is it was a scary situation that night. Okay.
Right.
Scary. No, who wants
right.
to have any sort of intruder in your house? You've got an armed weapon, or he's armed. You have a weapon involved. It's just all around scary.
Right.
Do you have trouble sleeping at night? Do you have trouble living alone with your children? What is just hard for you right now?
So I don't have fear in the sense that that you might think. And I do believe that's just kind of a God thing.
Yeah.
'Cause it doesn't
oh, yeah.
seem like I should. Absolutely, I don't sleep very well, but that has a lot more to do with the loss. A lot. We all had nightmares in the beginning. For me, those have kind of subsided. The everyday hard. It is hard waking up every single morning. I sleep with his shirt, and waking up another morning knowing that he's not there is hard. And we've celebrated four birthdays now, and next week is going to be Mother's Day, and his mom is going to have to go through the same thing that we've, you know, kind of all gone through. Those are hard.
Yeah.
You can't imagine what it's like to want more than anything to share, you know, joy with your children, but to know that
there's someone
that's missing, and we all know it.
Yeah.
So every day is hard. You know, it could be a moment that somebody at work who, you know, doesn't know the whole story just kind of happens to say, now what happened exactly? And then that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
It's hard when my kids are having a hard day. You're a mother, so you understand that there is nothing that is harder than watching your child suffer.
Yeah. And yet, you have been able to find hope in this. You've been able to, it's very clear to all of us that God has been guiding you through this, that he's been helping you through this. Again, the very fact that you're able to articulate your feelings and do it in a way that you so clearly want to make sure it's a help to other people, that is something that we applaud you for, and we are all rooting for you. Would you guys agree that we're all rooting for you? We are rooting for you. And we're rooting for you. We're rooting for you. If you're in a place in your life where you are struggling with loss, whether it is a sudden loss or one that you've kind of seen coming for a while, whether it was health issues or whatever's been going on, and you're just struggling to get out of bed and struggling to move forward, there is hope. Denise has shown us that. There is hope. There is always hope in Jesus. I want to encourage you very practically to discipline yourself to be grateful. That is so much of what I have heard her say, that just, yep, she's cried. And yes, she has laid prostrate on the floor. Yes, she said, why, God, would you have allowed this? But in the next breath, she has said, nevertheless, I thank you because of who you are and because of what you've done. And listen, if you will look around you, you will see that there are miracles all around you happening every single day. There is always something to be grateful for. Gratitude will be the shovel that starts to dig you out of that hole of grief and hopelessness. So listen, this is just part one of a conversation we're going to continue to have, because there's a spectrum of grief that we kind of want to deal with and talk about. And then we're going to have a very wise, wise counselor here to help us to just talk about how we not only personally can deal with grief in our own lives, but then if we have people around us, friends of ours, and they've had tragic losses and we're not sure what to say or how to act or how to make sure we encourage them in a way that will really be healthy and helpful, we're going to be able to get some wisdom on that as well. Thank you so much for joining me, and I can't wait to see you next time. I am so glad that you're here. I'm Priscilla. Welcome to the chat. This is the place where we just kind of, you know, chat about things in our lives, things that matter. Today is an important conversation because we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people just kind of hold inside, hold in their hearts and in their own minds, and they don't really talk about it. They're not really open and honest about the way they're feeling. We're going to talk about grief. What do you do when you really have experienced a traumatic loss, one that has left a hole in your heart, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to recover from that and move forward in health and wholeness? We're going to talk to a couple of people today whose stories really will touch your heart. And I have a feeling there are going to be so many of you that are able to relate specifically to what they say. So you're going to want to stay tuned, grab a fresh cup of coffee or whatever your favorite drink is, pull up a chair, and let's chat. Glad that you're here. I'm Priscilla, and we're going to have a great conversation today, one that I think is so important. In fact, we've already been having this conversation. This is part two of a talk that we've been having that's really important, and you need to go view episode one if you have not, because we've been talking about grief and really how it can cripple you and keep you from moving forward when you've had a traumatic loss in your life. And we're going to keep that conversation going today. We have been talking to Denise Madison. Would you please welcome her again to our program? She has quite a little story, and I want you to just tell us, just in a nutshell, what we've already talked about in episode one. Just tell us what happened, what the loss was.
Absolutely. My husband was murdered, so it's our five children and I just kind of going through and allowing the Lord to speak to us through that tragedy.
Yeah, and so five children and one on the way. You found out about this baby 2 weeks after you buried your husband, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And speaking of babies, I have a sweet friend with me. Her name is Angie Smith. You might be already familiar with her, but would you please help me to welcome Angie Smith to the program as well? I'm so glad you're here, Angie.
I'm honored to be here.
Yes, and you have experienced a little bit of a loss in your life, big loss in your life as well. How long ago, first of all, tell me how long it's been now.
It's funny to say. Because people ask, and then all of a sudden you'll say a number, and you're like, has it been that long?
Yeah.
She would have turned 7 last month. Audrey would have been 7.
Tell us about that journey you walked, what happened, and how are you doing today?
Well, and it's a neat thing to have, because I do feel like we're sort of in lots of ways at different ends of the spectrum.
It's a spectrum,
both from the
it?
Loss and the time and the way, but a lot of our questions are still the same about who God is. And so I'm grateful to be able to sit with you. And I so enjoyed listening to you and had to redo my makeup right before I came out. It was such a blessing. So, it was a very different loss, but my husband and I already had 3 daughters. And we were expecting our 4th, and it was just one of those, like, went into an ultrasound and everyone was like, are you finally having a boy? I mean, that was the only thing, you know, we didn't have any reason to believe anything was wrong. And I was about 20 weeks along, and right away it was just, I could tell from the technician's face, something is really wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, to make a long story short, we found out that Audrey had several conditions that made her what they called incompatible with life, which they urged us to have an abortion the following day. They thought the best thing was to terminate. And we just really prayed about it and felt like the Lord wanted us to carry her, and so we did. And as long as we could. And when I delivered her on April 7th, 2008, she lived for about 2.5 hours. So we got to hold her and spend time with her, and even all during the pregnancy, the girls were really already then thinking of her as a sister. It made me think of that when you were talking about being pregnant, that, you know, her children are seeing this, and it's amazing the children's comprehension of what is coming.
Yeah.
And so even from very early on, they were anticipating a sister and grieved along with us when we lost her.
And you're right, there is a spectrum here that is represented by the two of you. One of you has lost an adult, a spouse, and the other of you a child. And to help us sort of wade through these waters of grief, and then also try to figure out some practical steps for wherever you may be on that spectrum of walking out of it, is a counselor who's going to just really dig in deep and help us to get some questions answered. So would you guys please help me to welcome him? He's Dr. David Wally. Help me to welcome him to the program. I want to ask you a little bit about this spectrum. I would assume that grief is grief, but is there a difference in the way you grieve or the way you feel about the loss when it is a child versus a spouse or an adult?
Absolutely. And it's interesting listening to these two ladies at different points along the way. Even the way they tell their stories, you can tell they're in two very different places. Yes, it's one was a husband, one was a child, but the timing in their case is what seems so strikingly different. You can tell here is a story where she's claiming strength. Mm. Here's a story where she's lived the strength through many years, and that spectrum will become her reality, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah. Do you think, Doctor, that time heals, or is it what you do with the time that will determine whether or not you heal?
That's a really interesting question. I think that God uses time to heal us, but I think that one of the things that fascinates me most about grief is that grief is often described as a lot of emotions, and sometimes we get bogged down in one of those emotions. We get angry. We get hurt. We're afraid. We're confused. And if we wrestle with those emotions with God rather than get stuck in those emotions, what happens is we move from our human temporal perspective to God's perspective, and that's where the healing really happens.
Yep.
But that does require some time.
Yep.
That wrestling requires some time. So I do think that time is part of the process, but God gave time its properties, and He gives us the time to heal.
Yep. Angie, I want to know what the wrestling looked like. And I mean, in those 2 hours that you were holding this child in your arms, knowing that you had limited time, what did that literally look like for you and your husband? And then in the days following, how were you able to sort of go through that wrestling match with God and sort of work your way out of it instead of getting stuck in it?
The hours that we had her were so peaceful. And I say that not, I'm not a courageous person. I'm overly emotional. But I feel like the Lord gave us that day. So the wrestling was sort of the before. It was, you know, and you do a better job of describing the steps, but there was this sort of like, when you're coming to terms with what's happening, there's a grief that happens there and a wrestling. And I can remember being pregnant, and a few days after her diagnosis, I was at a baby shower for one of my dear friends. And I remember us hugging on the way out and our stomachs pushing up against each other. And, you know, the whole time we'd been praying for her to have a healthy baby, but everyone in the room knew what was going on with me. And so everyone just sort of started crying because it was like, how do you...
This dichotomy.
Yeah, how do we do, this, right? And so that day on the way home from that, I'll just never forget. And it was raining and I was driving home. And I remember literally screaming at the top of my lungs and pounding on my steering wheel and saying, you can fix this. Fix this. You know, so there was that wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is there's still time, you know. I always think of the story of Lazarus when I think of this, because, you know, there comes that point after he's dead and they're like, but he's sick.
But
can you come right now? He's sick.
It.
Like, there's still, And so, and then again, even after, so it was like, while we had her. Then after, it was a different wrestling of now how do we deal with that? And so, I loved something that you said, and I feel like that's been my experience too, is that over and over again, the Lord has had to say to me, I am not intimidated by your emotions. So you're mad. You're devastated. I'm God. So I actually know that. Okay. Like you can make up a pretty prayer and say it to me, and I still know your heart. So how about you just scream if you need to in the car, but you just bring it to my feet. Can we just do that? Just include me in it.
Authenticity.
Yeah. And I needed that. Like, I think there's that part of us that wants to, and I'm sure we've all struggled with that. You know, I talk to God and there's a part of me that wants to edit what I'm saying. And, you know, and then I feel like the Lord really used that wrestling before and after to sort of say, that's not what I've asked of you. Mm-hmm. I asked you to include me in it, but you're human and you're wrapped in flesh and you're going to experience these things. So, yeah.
What do you think would be the first step? If someone were sitting on your couch, which these ladies are, right? We all are. We're sitting on your couch.
This is my couch.
This is your couch.
It is.
And in fact, this is your show. We need you to talk to us.
We're just going to relax for the rest of it.
That's exactly right. I want to know what would be, if you gave someone the first step to getting out of the pit of grief that could cripple them, what would be sort of the first thing? Do this starting today.
I usually ask people to tell me their story. Just tell me the story, like you had Denise do. Tell me the story. I think a lot of people, and I hear this many, many times, when a person has lost, particularly a child, they're afraid people are going to forget the child. Mm. And so I ask them to tell me the story, because it's a way of imprinting that story in their brain as if it's not already imprinted, but it's passing it along to another person. And I tell them, I'm going to carry that story with you. Mm-hmm. So I ask them to tell the story. I want to hear the story. I want to know about this. I want to know about the experience.
Okay. Now let me ask a question with that in mind, because I think part of the hard part about being in relationship with someone who has had a loss in your life, if you're friends with that person, you're not exactly sure if you're supposed to ask them about it. You're not exactly sure. You're kind of walking on eggshells.
Right.
So as a friend of someone who's experiencing this, would you suggest that it is kind of out on the floor in conversation, that we do let them know we're a safe place to tell the story again and again if they need to? Or are we supposed to just wait until they want to open up about that?
I think inviting is always a proper thing to do. There are always the kinds of two ways of communicating. You know, lots of things we hear about communicating, but there are two ways, demanding and inviting. And I don't ever want to demand that somebody tell me their story. That could be interfering in their privacy. But inviting them to tell me their story, I always want them to feel free to tell me their story, even if they need to tell me again.
Yeah.
That's part of the process for them until they don't need to tell it anymore for a while. Yeah. And we may go and work on some other things, and then they come back and they need to tell me the story again.
Yep.
So I do think that's true. There are people, because of my position in the office, I probably have more freedom to ask people to tell me their story.
Right.
People I don't know.
Right.
But they've walked in with a kind of trust. But on the street, I might not ask those people to tell me their story because I haven't earned the right. It's the invasion of that kind of privacy. But if I could just add this one other thing, part of telling the story, and this is a very uncomfortable way to phrase this, I've never figured out another way. We have pallbearers. It's not something we do a lot at funerals anymore. We don't really carry the casket. But bearing the pall is part of that experience, is feeling the weight of the lifelessness.
Wow.
And telling the story is a way of bearing the pall. And so I become a pall bearer with them. I carry the feeling of the weight of what's missing. The person that used to be here is not here anymore. I want to carry that with you.
Isn't that an interesting way to look at that? And I think really overall, that's sort of what friendship should be. It should be us bearing one another's
burdens. Under the weight.
Yeah, and kind of helping them with that journey. We're going to talk more about how we can do that. And about, you know, I'm very interested to talk to these ladies about some of the things people said or did when they were in the midst of that pain that were not wise things to do or say. I think that could help all of us to just be able to be responsible and be helpful in these circumstances and relationships. So we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. If you're feeling discouraged and defeated, if you're a bit overwhelmed or maybe even feeling undone, if you're wondering whether or not your future has any hope of victory, then listen, this Bible study is for you. Strongholds are torn down by the Word of God. Fortresses are dismantled by the Word of God. When you place faith in Jesus Christ, the righteousness of Christ is credited to your spiritual bank account, that you are the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. I invite you to join me for a lesson in putting on the full armor of God. Our lives are going to be changed, yours and mine, because we're going to learn that we've got the victory in Jesus' name. Well, hey there. Welcome back. We are doing some healing today on the program and talking about how you can make sure that you're not stuck in a place of grief, no matter why that grief has come into your life. We've talked to three incredible people, two of which have experienced some loss in their lives, and they've been kind enough to share their story with us. And I want to know from you two ladies, both of you, I want to know if you went through a phase of being, and you've kind of already described this a little bit, but being plain old flat out mad, just straight up mad at God, mad at the situation. How were you able to get a little softening back in your heart after just being angry?
Do you want to go?
Do you have any thoughts? Okay. I was going to say, it sort of goes back to what I said before, but that I was so, I sort of felt like I needed to edit that. And a lot of good came from reading things like Psalms, where you're like, there's emotion in this, and you're reading people who are angry, you know, and they're like, why is this happening? And so for me, I finally realized, oh, okay, I can feel this. I can't get stuck here. But it's okay for me to feel this. And again, just to own it for what it was.
Yeah.
To say, I think the more time I spent trying to act like I wasn't angry, it would pile up. And then finally, when I was like, no, I'm
pretty upset.
Yeah. And I'm mad at you, God.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know what to do with that. There was something healthy that came and a shift in my relationship with him and the way that I saw him as a father. So I don't know about you. Have you had moments like that yet? It's early for you, so I don't know what.
I have. One moment in particular kind of stands out. I had by far to this point the darkest day. And what kind of struck me was that God asked something extremely hard of both of us that night. And I kind of got to a place where I felt like he asked the harder thing of me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just being very frank and honest right now. Because I felt like, you know, my husband is now face to face with Jesus,
Yeah. You
know, but I'm here and I am aching. And I kind of got a little bit of like, Lord, I am mm-hmm. suffering and my husband is face to face with you. And, you know, this is a hard thing. And when people come and say to me, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm so blessed by your story. Yeah. And it's just really touched me. And I would say, Lord, why is my pain? I'm glad for them. That's fantastic. But I'm the one that lives this mm-hmm. ache. Our children, his parents, we're the ones that are living with this ache. And what happened as a result of that, like I said, it was a true day of just being in despair and agony and felt, you know, forsaken, to be honest with you. And I felt like the next day, God helped me to see something, and that was that he gave me that as a gift, my experiencing that, so that I might be able to partake in the suffering of Christ, so that I could be more like him. Mm-hmm. And for me, I can tell you that the second day, the one day was so very dark, but the day that God said, that was my gift to you so that you might understand a little bit better the suffering that Christ endured on your behalf.
Yeah. I think that there is a lot of freedom in listening to you guys talk. I'm just thinking about the freedom that comes over someone when they realize that asking the why question is not sin. Like, it's not like you're
totally
on the wrong side of the relationship with God just because you want to know why.
Yeah.
And most of the time we're not going to get an answer, but why, David, would you say it is important to know you're free to go to God authentically, upset and all, and ask that why question? Because I think a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important to be able to ask why?
Yeah.
Because
to let that out and be authentic.
We don't like not knowing.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds pretty simple, but we don't like not knowing. And what you mentioned earlier, Angie, you said there was this moment where you said, you can fix this. And that's mm-hmm. what anger demands. Anger says something has to happen. And that's when we go to God and say, why? And he doesn't necessarily come back and tell us why.
Right. And that, see, that's
one
the
of the things
thing.
That starts happening is he starts transforming us. I think that one of the things that we get caught up in grief is, so what do we do? What are the steps? Mm-hmm. When really God is doing stuff in us in the grieving process that we're not aware of, that we're not participants in. He is constantly healing us in the grief process without us doing anything.
Mm-hmm. So when is grieving, this is an interesting thought. The process is important. That's what you've just said.
Mm-hmm.
When do you know you've crossed the line into an unhealthy state of grieving? When it's no longer a healthy, beneficial process, but it is smothering you and you're not moving forward. How does someone know when they've crossed that boundary?
That's a great question. One of the things I think you have to look at is time and relationships. I usually tell people when a significant loss has happened, you've lost a daughter, you've lost a husband, it's going to take at least a year. You have to go through the anniversaries. This is the day that we got married. This is the first birthday without him. Father's Day is coming up. And you have to go through the anniversary of the event where he lost his life. All of those events, you have to go through those. And then it's not the first time again. Mm-hmm. You kind of wonder, am I going to make it through the first Christmas? So you begin to look at time. So time is a factor there. Another thing is, am I destroying other relationships around me because I'm not allowing those relationships to help me be pointed to God? Am I not allowing those relationships to comfort me? Mm-hmm. Am I not allowing those relationships to be healing in my life? Am I being destructive toward them? So I like to look at time, and I like to look at the relationships around them.
That's good. Mm-hmm.
And when anger turns to bitterness, that's another.
How do you detect that?
How do you detect
How do you detect when anger has become bitterness?
When bitterness is, anger tends to be more acute. I am angry with you because you did this. Bitterness is my outlook at the world is nothing's
going to
work out right. Everything is bad. It's not going to be good. It's just going to be bad from here on out.
Okay.
And that sometimes gets pointed at somebody, but most of the time it's just generalized.
Okay. So if you're just a mean person, then you know that that anger has taken root and it's become a little bit of bitterness.
Okay. You're going to save us a lot of time.
Yeah. If you're mean, if you're angry and upset.
Right.
Okay, so I want to know, what are the worst things that some people did? They thought they were being helpful. They thought they were being kind. They thought they were saying something that should have been a blessing in your life. But you just really wanted to smack them upside their head.
I did smack
people.
No, I did. Yeah.
But I felt Please that. Tell us, help us, because people that are friends of folks that are really going through some tough stuff, you know, you're really kind of walking on eggshells because they're not quite sure what to say or what to do or not do.
Uh-huh.
So could you tell us what just didn't work for you and then what did?
Yeah. Okay, we talked a little bit about this before we even came out here, because it's funny how I do think most of the time the heart is to help. I mean, their motive is not wrong. They want
Intentions
to.
Intentions are good.
Absolutely. And listen, grief is hard. And so stepping into someone else's grief is super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so they want to make you feel better, but they also want to make themselves feel better. I mean, they just want to feel like they did something that fixed you and fixed them. And so instead of like, I just want to sit in this grief with you and wrestle with it, people will try to, you know, I mean, it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So some of the things that I heard frequently were that God needed another angel in heaven. I really struggled with that. I've talked to a lot
of
people who've
heard
lost
that before,
children,
right?
And that's one that I hear
both.
A lot.
Okay. That doesn't work for you.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No. And actually, it doesn't work for anything theologically. So it's not just me. It's actually just not.
It doesn't work for God.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other one that doesn't really work for God that I heard a lot was Satan took your baby.
You heard that?
Oh, I hear it all the time. All the time.
So it was a demonic attack.
Basically.
He won.
This wasn't God. Mm-hmm. God wouldn't do that to you. Because, you know, again, in people's brains, it's like, I need to believe that God is good and Satan is evil. And so if something bad happens.
So it's easier to compartmentalize good and evil.
I'll put that on him. And so, you know, we were talking about, like, how do you respond to that? And it's hard and you wrestle with it because sometimes there are people who are coming to you and saying, I lost my baby, but I know that Satan took, I knew that this wasn't God. And it's hard to wrestle through that. But theologically, at the end of the day, you're like, how do you find hope in a world where you feel like Satan can trump God? This isn't healthy. It's not biblically accurate. So
you got that right.
Did God want this?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Did he grieve with me? Yes. That night in a hospital room, when I handed my daughter to a nurse and watched her walk out of the room, and I'm pounding on every single button wanting to get her back, and the only thing I could say was like, you have to be with him because I have nothing else. I believe he grieved that loss with me.
Yeah.
So no, he didn't want it. But ultimately,
he's in control.
I only find peace knowing he had the final say.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I can rest in that. And so that was one of the comments that I heard a lot. And then a lot of times I heard, for me, because it was a child, one that is a really common, well, you have three other healthy, beautiful children, you know. And again, the effort is, look on the bright side.
It would have been better for them just to be quiet.
But people don't want to be.
They feel like they have to fill the silence with something instead of just being there.
Right. And I will say, the month after Audrey died, and people who followed my story know that my nephew, he died the next month at 10 weeks of age of SIDS. And so they're buried together. My sister-in-law was holding her newborn healthy child and singing over Audrey as she was buried. And I remember us looking at each other and thinking, why does God choose? You know, and of course, we had no idea. So a month later, now I'm on the other side. And I just remember driving to Georgia and sitting in front of her and realizing
Angie, I didn't know that. I didn't know that close timing there with those
babies. Yeah. And so I get being on the other side because my tendency, even having just gone through it, was to
fill the silence.
So I get it. I really do. Yeah. But, you know, you read about Job and his friends, and it says at one point they came and sat with him in his sorrow.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes that's awkward,
but
and
just
it's not coming up with answers. It's just sitting. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a freeing comment for a lot of us, that we just need to know that sitting is just good. Just sit there and wait. Wait for the – sometimes you're sitting there is the invitation they need to know. You're the safe place where they can open up and talk about what's on their heart. What about for you? Anything people did that just – or are doing still, because it's only been 4 months. Is there anything that just – I mean, it grates on your nerves when you hear it or see it done?
Absolutely. So a few that I'll mention. One of the things, and again, David, you might say that this is something that time will change, but I really am not interested in anyone talking to me about 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. So when someone says, you'll see 10 years from now, you know, the smiles on the faces and when, you know, when the babies, no, there's no amount of time that's going to make the loss okay. Now, do I believe that it's true that I will learn to live with the ache and I will learn to have strength, you know, day by day? Absolutely. And I believe that's true. And Angie's sitting here and that's, I mean, that's proof that that's the case. However,
but when someone says 10 years from now, you'll get it, what that communicates is get over it already.
Sure, absolutely.
That communicates, let's get on with your
and
life
the
already.
Loss isn't going to go away.
Yeah.
It absolutely isn't. I think that's a really big one. I think one of the others is, just kind of in general when people will say to me, and this is very unique to our situation, but when they'll say, but you have a baby. It's similar to what you're saying about the three children. Yeah, but you have a baby, but you have a piece of Corey, but you have, you know, every time you see your children's faces, it's along the same line. It doesn't replace the loss. It doesn't change things. So I am completely in agreement with you. Just sitting with you and letting you cry and letting you just kind of be. And I will tell you, one of the things that I appreciate, and it's kind of to your point about acknowledging, I had a friend, so yesterday was my birthday.
Happy birthday, friend.
Oh, thank you. But I had a friend and, you know, had lots of people that were there, but one person just came up to me and sat right next to me. She put her hand on my knee and she said, I am so blessed to be here and to celebrate your birthday, but I just want you to know I'm sorry that Corey's not.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It meant the world to me.
So this is what that sounds like to me. Acknowledging the loss and not trying to minimize the loss.
Yeah.
Is the key to being appropriate with someone who has experienced this. Sound about right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think the other side of it is, as you get people, like, again, it's the eggshells thing. For me, it was always more comfortable when they would bring it up. You know, and a lot of people say, what do I say to my friend?